Hey, everybody.
What's up?
Why is it so bright over there? Oh, because that door's open.
That's yeah, good.
I had it closed, but I guess Pookie pushed it open.
Yeah.
She's been hanging out in there, like hanging out in the laundry basket. I don't know what her deal is today.
Yeah, got a late start because I had to fuck with the damn sprinkler system, make sure everything's working good and the program's right. Make sure sprinklers are
pulling right. Well, the connection crashed when I first started anyway, so okay. I had to start over.
All right.
I've been having a bitch of a time with this connection today. I don't know what it is. This computer, that computer, I'm having all kinds of problems.
It's everything.
Yeah, I know. That's what happens when you live in the middle of nowhere, I guess.
Well, I think it's worse than that, you know. I think there's just problems in general. You know? I heard the internet's going down in certain states, in certain regions for a while. Just, you know, cyber attacks, man. Cyber attacks.
Okay, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so today, as we mentioned yesterday, we are going to be talking about a 1973 movie that we just ended up watching at random, because it had Burt Reynolds in it. We were actually going to do Cannonball Run, but we couldn't really find it anywhere.
It wasn't 100% at random, they offered it for free.
And well, yeah, I mean,
and go, I remember that movie when I was a kid.
Random in the sense that we were just flipping through the free shit and said, okay.
I remember people talking about this movie when I was a little kid. White Lightning, how good this movie was. This is like, you know, 7-year-olds telling me this. And 8-year-olds. You know, I was probably in Mississippi at the time. But we were teenagers later on when Cannonball Run came out. And Burt Reynolds was already a damn fixture in Southern culture. Already well established. And I had kind of missed his establishment. I didn't really, I just thought he was just a dude with a mustache.
Yeah. Right? Here's dude, this dude with a mustache. Said just he's came dude out with a mustache.
Yeah. But he had a bunch of movies in his past that kind of built him up to be kind of like a Southern superstar. And it was movies like this. And this was a good movie. It was real good. For its time, for what it was.
Yeah, I didn't remember ever... Like, I thought that I had seen this one, but then when I was watching it, I was kind of like, no, I think it was Gator that I saw, which was the sequel to this. You know what I mean? It's like the same character.
Yeah.
And that came out in 1976. But I don't think that I'd ever seen this one, because this was 1973.
This has a lot of the same cast as Cannonball Run.
Yeah.
The dude who played... what was his name? The guy that had the damn truck... Yeah, or excuse me, same cast as Smokey the Bandit.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it is.
That's not that guy that you're thinking of. That's not who that is. No,
looks just like him.
It's not though.
Okay.
No, in Smokey and the Bandit, that was Jerry Reed, the country singer.
Okay.
And that wasn't him in that movie.
It looks just like him. I thought that was the same guy.
Nope, it's not.
Okay. Totally well, he's familiar. Different. He's familiar.
Totally different guy.
When I saw him, he looked familiar. You know, what I mean, I had seen him before. What's that guy's name? The blonde-haired guy in this?
I don't know.
Okay.
But it's not the same guy.
Because he's in a bunch of other movies. So it's not the first time I've seen him. But I thought he was the same guy from Smokey the Bandit.
No, that was Jerry Reed. Like okay. I said, he was famous in music other than movies. He was like a country singer.
All right.
That's it. He's the one that did Eastbound and Down. He was all that.
Okay.
That was him singing.
I stand corrected. I thought that was the same guy.
Nope. That was a different dude.
All right. So it's a good movie. It's kind of like you can see where... A lot of the shit from Smokey and the Bandit came from. They lifted it from this movie. A lot of it.
Well, I think... I don't even know if it was so much lifting. It was just kind of like, in the 70s, this was kind of like a subgenre that was popular.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of had your Southern...
Maybe, yeah.
Movies with car chases and moonshining and shit like that. And bootlegging and that kind of stuff. And there was just kind of like a whole... Because even in, you know, the exploitation cinema circuit... There were all those kind of, you know, redneck exploitation type of movies as well.
Which, growing up for the summers in Mississippi, you know, visiting my dad, I don't remember any moonshine. I don't really buy it, even not in the 70s. The setup in this movie is this. Burt Reynolds plays an inmate. He's, I think he's done 4 years. He's only got a year left on his sentence. And somewhere out in the bayou, this bad cops execute some guys. They shoot them while they're tied to weights in a damn... Well, no, they had them tied to a bunch of cinder blocks in a canoe, and they shot the canoe and sank it.
Yeah.
All right, which was supposedly drowned these guys. Well, one of those guys was Burt Reynolds' brother.
younger brother. He's like a teenager, or like in his, or I guess he's college age.
Yeah. I'm calling him Burt Reynolds' brother. Of course, you know, Burt Reynolds is playing a character named Gator McClinsky.
McCluskey.
Yeah, Gator McCluskey. And the feds approach him and they say, look, we've been trying to get this bad cop who owns the whole damn county. And he just killed your brother. If you can help us get the dirt on the guy, we'll let you out a little bit early. And go down there and get the proof we need. And we'll lock him up if you testify. So McCluskey, or Gator, gets released early from prison. And they put him on a damn secret agent mission from the feds to get the dirt on this cop. And of course, it's Gator's family fucking is totally opposed to it. Why the hell are you going after bootleggers? Why the hell are you betraying your people helping the feds?
Well, because his dad is a moonshiner, too. Like, well, that's why Burt Reynolds was in prison for moonshining, because that was like a family business.
Yeah, and this is a lot of accuracy in this movie. You know, it was made for Southerners, by Southerners, for the Southern market. And that attitude was a reality in the South. A lot of South didn't consider itself to be on friendly basis with the federal authorities. Now, the thing with bootlegging, now they kind of, in the movie, as the story unfolds, the explanation for why bootlegging and making moonshine was so important to the South, supposedly, was that you could get a pint of moonshine for about the same price as a fifth of whiskey. And that pint of moonshine went a lot further than a fifth of whiskey. And none of that money went to the feds, and it was all locally produced. So Southerners, low-income Southerners, would rather drink that. That's what their explanation was.
Well, and some of those counties were dry counties, too, were they not? So you couldn't even I think sometimes you couldn't even get regular.
Yeah, but I've discussed that earlier on the show, too. Make it a dry county, you used church groups to force it into a dry county, which would give you a monopoly on booze. That was all pre-planned. And it would also drive out political enemies. You didn't want them in your town, but in your county. But they still drank, and even the people that passed those laws drank. Now, the thing is that I can remember 73, 74, 75, up to 77. I vaguely remember it in Mississippi. I don't remember anybody drinking moonshine. I remember drinking shit like Wild Turkey. I kind of think the bootlegging moonshine aspect in a lot of these Southern exploitation movies was kind of more of something left over from the 30s and the 20s.
Well, the thing about it, though, it's probably, I'm sure, you know, people did it, but I don't think it was as widespread as they showed in the movies. Yeah. But see, the thing about making moonshine is that you still have, and you kind of see it in this movie, too, is that you can still have your heroes, like people you're supposed to be rooting for, doing that, even though technically it's illegal.
Right.
So they're criminals, but you're just kind of like, it's just booze. It's like, what's it? So you can still be doing illegal shit without being unsympathetic.
I think that's kind of why. I think it's more of a plot device.
I think, like I said, that's why in Smokey and the Bandit, all they were doing was taking beer, like, you know, across the, you know, across the Mississippi River, which you weren't technically supposed to do, but it wasn't like, yes, technically it was illegal, but it wasn't. No one would really see it as that big a deal.
Right.
So you could still kind of see them as these rebellious kind of and not criminals.
When in reality, with the money and the money on the line and the profits that they were talking about, you couldn't achieve that with beer or booze. It would have to have been weed at least. But they can't put that in the movie.
Yeah.
They can't put that in the movie. But in reality, it would have been more like something like weed.
Murder Hornet says, my brother in Florida makes his own cinnamon moonshine. It tastes pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's something else. Yeah, people made alcohol in the South, but not really to sell, just to drink it. Because it's cheap. It's cheap to make your own moonshine-type alcohol. And you make that on the kitchen stove, you know, just out of sugar water and stuff, distilled things and potato peels or whatever, make vodka. So, but they weren't selling it, I don't think. They're just putting it in jars and drinking it.
Or maybe, like, giving it to their friends. Giving it to their friends. A couple of friends and stuff. Because I kind of feel like in this movie, and I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying it might not have been as widespread. And like I said, this movie was set in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And in this, he kind of almost has to go undercover and, like, infiltrate this whole network.
Yeah.
And, like, one of the guys has, like, kind of a big operation. He has, like, 20 dudes, like, working for him, like, running the moonshine to various places.
Now, I remember seeing moonshine in Mississippi in the 80s. It was always in damn jars, you know, mason jars. But it wasn't something sold. It was just got gifts.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, what would be a homebrew, and it would be like family versions of it, and it'd all be flavored, and they'd pour it into things like Hawaiian Punch.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, people do it a lot nowadays, making their own craft beers. You don't really run into problems unless you're trying to, like, you know,
sell it
or run a big
fire out of it.
Right. I mean, obviously, if you're just making it for yourself and your friends, I don't really think anyone's going
to
get
it. But even in the 80s, the demand wouldn't have been there to make an empire. Because, fucking man, they were drinking Wild Turkey and all special kinds of damn Jack Daniels. And, you know, Southerners had money. They just fucking went down to the grocery store, liquor store, you know.
But yeah, so that's kind of where. So basically, he has to go in, and like I said, he doesn't know any of these guys. But when he's kind of doing his investigation, he's not, well, he knows who killed his brother, but he's trying to get evidence because the feds, they want evidence against this corrupt cop who's played by Ned Beatty, by the way. Ned Beatty, I'm sure he's played a villain in other movies. But this is the only movie that I can remember him playing a villain in, and he plays actually a really good villain.
Yeah, this is one of the best roles I've seen him in.
Yeah, he was actually really good at
it. He's actually kind of intimidating as a cop. And usually he plays a clown.
Yeah.
You know, like in Superman.
That's true.
You know. But no, he fucking kind of intimidating Southern cop. Police chief. Fat, but he had a whole bunch of fucking jokers working for him.
Well, I mean,
and they were murderers.
Well, I mean, yeah. And I think that was a really good opening scene because they establish it right away where it's like Ned Beatty and his like other cop buddy, and they're just taking these two teenagers essentially out in this canoe, and they're all tied up and like tied to a fucking cinder block, and they just like, and they just shoot them and just sail off. Bye.
Yeah.
You know, there's
kind
of
funny things about that scene is that they shoot the damn canoe and they show the canoe sinking with the guys in it. And then it stops for a second, it cuts away. I was like, well, yeah, because that's how deep it is. It's only like 3.5 feet deep where they shot him. You could just tell by the trees that the bayou is not deep.
Although if you were tied up and couldn't get away, you might still get eaten by alligators. So there's
water would have went up to about here on them, probably. But,
I'm sure it probably wasn't fun.
Yeah, it would have been there.
It's just
but,
a movie.
It was just a movie, you know, because they were on the chairs. And then, but what I did like about it is even the villain character, the police chief, they kind of show his motivation. He's doing the wrong thing, but he's surrounded by some people that are trying to snap him back into reality. Like, you can't be like it was. They tell him that several times. He's trying to make the South go back to what it was, you know, in the early 1900s. And that world wasn't coming back. And there were Southerners that fucking wanted it to. My grandparents were like that. My grandmother fucking wanted 1920 back.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Well, yeah, a lot of people are grandparents' age did.
Yep. And everything was from the 1920s, 1930s viewpoint, which got old, man.
Well, yeah.
Because they were fucking rigid. It was their way or the highway. There was no wiggle room with anything.
Yeah.
You remember that? Remember how they were?
Yeah,
real fucking.
I remember.
And I tell you what, they had fucking strong willpower. They didn't really have good ideas, but fuck, they stuck to them.
Well, they couldn't really think of anything else to do. Like you
really
said, they were very rigid.
Real rigid, right.
They were just kind of like, well, this is the way
stubborn.
To do things, and yeah.
Stubborn.
They thought there was only one way to do things,
yep.
And this is the way you have
you're
to do
this
them.
Way, and if it's not like this, this... And he gets into it. This cop thinks... He's convinced that these college kids are part of a communist insurgency. He's convinced.
Well, see,
that.
Now, I really like that because I like that. Even some of the like good guy characters, and this is there was a very prevalent attitude in the South because I remember my grandparents and you know people there.
They talk like that. Yeah,
where they thought just like you know college students that were protesting, you know, against the Vietnam War, or, you know, for pot legalization or whatever, which was kind of more the thing in this movie because there was kind of some legalized pot type stuff. And which nowadays is not controversial, no. But back then was like a really
it's
big deal.
It's kind of de facto. They're not enforcing anything anymore.
And yeah, so back then, so even like a lot of the good guy characters in this, like the sympathetic character, like, ah, goddamn hippies, even though they were doing literally nothing. And then actually you find out later, because Burt Reynolds' character is kind of like that too, but then he finds out like his brother, his younger brother, was kind of like that, was like protesting. And that was ended up, it kind of ends up that that's contributed to what got him killed. Not so much, it didn't have anything to do with the moonshining or doing anything illegal. It was just like the cop being a shithead and not
liking.
We're
gonna have a protest.
Yeah, and not liking college students, or not liking, you know, the protest for whatever it was. I don't even think they said what the protest was for.
No.
Like I said, I think it was pot legalization. That was because somebody drove by in a car that said something about legalized pot. And
that's right. And this, and then the cop mentioned, well, shit, if they legalized that, all our fucking profits for the moonshine would go away.
Right. So they weren't they didn't even wade into the Vietnam War quagmire or anything like that. They were talking about pot legalization, which, like I said, is really funny nowadays. But yeah, he was worried about pot legalization, I guess, because it would cut into his profits, because the corrupt cop was taking money from the moonshiners, too. Yeah. So he thought it was going to cut into his profit margin. So to him, these college students were like directly threatening his livelihood.
Yeah.
I guess he saw it that way.
Another accuracy I liked in the movie is that Gator and his friends, that generation, were almost kind of feral. They were kind of had half of their foot in the old South and the other half of their foot in the new world. They really didn't believe too much of either side. They were kind of, when you see the movie, you'll see what I'm talking about. They were kind of caught in between two worlds. And my dad and his friends were exactly like that. Like, they weren't religious. They were wild. They weren't hippies, but there was a lot of, like, sexual liberation. They weren't violent, but like they weren't bad guys, but they would fight, you know what I mean? You'll see what I'm talking about. This, you know what I mean? Like, they weren't malevolent guys, but if they felt they were disrespected, they would defend themselves from it. They were just trying to make sense of a fucking South that was changing, which I kind of liked that generation. They were a lot better than my grandparents' generation down there. They were kind of more like the sheriff in this story. Real fucking hard-headed and their way or the highway. Almost kind of, let's go back to 1920. And it's just not possible.
And as I said, most of the characters in this, the Southerners and stuff, are actually portrayed as like just good-hearted people trying to like make a buck.
Yeah.
Whereas the cop is kind of, and the cop even has like, you know, other cops that are like telling him, hey man, you can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
You know, what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
So he was kind of clearly portrayed as the villain. I think he was actually based on a real guy.
Yeah. Another thing I liked about the movie is that there's a lot of black people in the movie and they're watching the movie being filmed, but it fits. The car chase is going, goes down through the fucking black neighborhood, and they're all sitting outside watching
well,
these
why
crazy
wouldn't you?
White folks make this fucking movie. And then where,
like, look at this
and,
shit.
And that's accurate.
Doing?
Wherever you would go, there'd be little black kids running around. And there's one scene where this little black kid runs up, and fucking Gator's doing something. He looks down at this little black kid just sitting there drinking Coca-Cola, looking at him. And fucking, there's like, they have like this moment where he's realizing that there's two different worlds. Gator's reality and the reality of these little black kids is two different realities. You'll see the movie. You'll see what I'm talking about in the movie. And living in the South of that era, even up into the 80s, it was like that still. You'd run into little black kids, and they were almost kind of like they were from another country still. It was weird because there was no internet, no common culture. There was a white culture and a black culture, and it was very separate.
Well, as I said, I think it's kind of subtle, but they do kind of have Gator having, like, a little bit of a character arc. Not maybe just with about that. Like I said, that's pretty subtle, but him kind of coming to terms with the fact that actually at the end he realizes that he actually like admired his younger brother, the one that was murdered, for going to college and trying to like make something better himself and standing up for something that he believed in. And Gator's like, I've just been a criminal my whole life, I never did that. So him coming to terms with the fact that, hey, maybe certain hippies don't suck as much as like everyone thinks they did, or you know, or maybe they had some good ideas, or
something.
Yeah,
he was
like
saying
that.
There was something to it.
Yeah.
Saying that there was something to it. You shouldn't reject everything that they're saying. Gator's a centrist and a realist. That's more what it is. He's not poo-pooing anything. He's just taking good ideas from where they are and throwing away bad ideas from where they are, you know?
Grantham says, every time I've had homemade beer or wine, it tastes like it was made in a garbage can.
Yeah, you got to do it right. Steve's beer is fucking great, though. What are you talking about?
I don't think I've ever had homemade. I made ginger beer a few times, and it was all right. It wasn't all that great.
So much easier to make shine because it's just fucking 190 proof pure alcohol. You can flavor it afterwards.
Granthers also says Ned Beatty once said the male on male rape scene in Deliverance led to years of being shunned in Hollywood. I had kind of heard that too. That's really weird because it's just like a movie.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show that that back then people were still really uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Probably ruined his career.
Well, maybe.
Probably slowed it down quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, did he know the extent of it?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, maybe, yeah, I guess it wouldn't really occur to you, because it was a good role otherwise, and like I said, you have to, I mean, the balls of somebody that would be in a role like that, especially back then.
And I think this is after that role, isn't it?
When did Deliverance?
73.
This is 73. Deliverance was 72, was it not?
I think it was.
Oh, it might have been
It's a totally different role. He's an intimidating dude in this.
Which is kind of crazy, because, yeah, it's almost kind of like a polar opposite.
Right.
Of the role that he played in that. Grantham also says, why are Southerners so tied to the past, much of which is indefensible on so many levels? Honestly, I don't really know why anyone is tied to the past. It's gone now, and...
Who's saying this?
Grantham.
Oh. Well, it depends on what it is you're talking about. There isn't one past. There was a bunch of them. Depending on who you were, what county you were in. None of it was unified. It was all chaos. It was... an agrarian society almost organized along the lines of, say, like Japanese feudalism. It was like that. Plantations and poor people had nothing in common with each other. Plantation owners were mostly originally from the South, and they would move in, and they would displace all the normal fucking farmers and all the using slave labor. Most of the South was against slavery. It was just that when plantations would take over a damn county and just run it like a feudal fiefdom, it was just chaos. Like, for instance, I think Mississippi probably had the most slaves in general over the time, but half of damn Mississippi counties abandoned. So it was never unified. There was never an agreement on anything. It was just kind of like a frontier place where you could run in there, and if you had enough force and enough money and enough guns, you could just do whatever you wanted. And corruption, lots and lots of corruption. But that was not the modern world. If you looked at the population, it was sparsely populated. It wasn't very many people, and they were spread out. That's just the way it was.
Thank you, David June, for the super chat. And then Grantham also said there's a 1980s movie called Southern Comfort. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. With Powers Booth and David Carradine.
Yeah.
About a bunch of moonshiners capturing a National Guard unit out in the swamps. It's free on YouTube. Yeah, we might have to do that. I remember that being really good. Yeah. I saw that like a while back. Tammy also says the movie Lawless, based on real moonshiners in Virginia. Very good Tom Hardy movie. Yeah, I think you guys like recommended that one before because I wrote it down. Let's see. Small town white. Okay. When I lived in, Grantham said, when I lived in North Carolina, I saw more overt racism and open affection between whites and blacks. Yeah, it's a little bit, schizo. And, can we talk about the ladies in this? Diane Ladd is in this. This might have been her first movie, although they spelled her name wrong on the credits. She plays dude's wife, mom. I can't remember now. But there is one woman in here that is the one guy's girlfriend.
Yeah, she's the best.
And for...
Sugar Pudding. Her name is Sugar Pudding.
Her name is Lou, but yeah. For a long time, I didn't know what her name was, because her boyfriend just kept calling her Sugar Pudding all the time.
They were both calling her Sugar Pudding.
And I was, like, so funny. She was, like, I think she was my favorite character.
Sugar Pudding was, like, one of the most accurate retro characters in this. Yeah, you'd see that in Mississippi a lot. And... Sugar Pudding would have been about fucking 13 or 14 in real life, though. But she talks about what she was like at 9. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, because, man, she's with the guy that that Burt Reynolds' character kind of takes up with to start the moonshining.
Yeah.
And Sugar Pudding, I guess, isn't getting enough from her boyfriend, so she's just kind of like, ooh, look at Burt Reynolds. So she just, like, not even kind of shamelessly flirting, and not even flirting. I mean, all but jumping right on the D. It's very, very funny.
Yeah. The South... The South, like I said, it was almost kind of like a feudal system. It was kind of like feudal Japan. It had a class. It kind of had class stratification. And descendants of sharecroppers and very poor sharecroppers, they'd been around for centuries down there. The poor people of the South, they were tended to be Scots Irish, mixed with German, and maybe some Native American. Which that's exactly what Burt Reynolds is. Okay, Jenny's part Native American. She fits that same kind of mix. It's very Southern. Occasional Spanish bloodlines. But with the poor sharecroppers, chastity and morality is the traditional Christian morality was not a thing. They were almost kind of like feral. They did whatever they wanted to do. They weren't criminal. They just were kind of like something out of a tribal community. The women did whatever they wanted to do. They didn't have to be upright and fucking chaste or anything. That was for rich people, you know. A lot of times they'd go to church just to pretend that they were uptight, but that's not who they were. But I remember girls like this. Grew up with them.
Grampther says, I'm going to warn my daughter that if she ever has a boyfriend who calls her Sugar Pudding, let me know, and I'll get a 9mm shovel. Yeah, it really does. Because for a long time, like I said, I wasn't sure. I was like, is her name Sugar Pudding? Because they just kept calling her that.
Yeah, it's her nickname, Sugar Pudding.
I know, but, I mean, okay, the thing about it is that I thought that it was just, like, her boyfriend calling her that, like, as a term of endearment. But a lot of times, like, if you have a term of endearment for somebody, you don't call them the same one all the time. They were calling her that like that was her name.
It was her nickname.
And I was just kind of like, is that her actual name? I was like, this is the South. It wouldn't shock me all that much if some parents had actually named their baby Sugar Pudding.
Yeah. Sugar Pudding was one of the best characters in the movie.
She was my favorite character. Yeah.
Sugar Pudding was very honest. He ain't watching.
And she's like in the car, like sitting in between the two of them, and she's like totally not even like, but her boyfriend's so clueless, he's just like looking out the window. And she's like, hey, ooh, like sticking her tongue in Burt Reynolds' ear, and she
wears shoes, and when she's talking to you, she just put her feet up on your shoulder, just rubbing your face, and she's talking to you, and that's walk around fucking dirty feet and shit.
Yeah, she really did have some dirty ass feet in this movie. Because she's like running around outside with no shoes on and stuff like that.
She was cute though. That's why she was Sugar Pudding.
It was just like so funny the way it was like that whole situation. Although
they had the damn conflict over in the store, and the way that shit was resolved is fucking perfect. And they even had a female witness go, yep. Yeah. Hey, you won. You just got to see the movie and understand.
Yeah, it really did. Honestly, it's funny because this movie, it's not like a comedy the way Smokey and the Bandit is. It's actually pretty serious.
Yeah.
But it did have like just some funny... I mean, actually, Burt Reynolds was actually pretty serious in this. Because, you know, his brother was dead and got murdered, and he was like pissed off about it. And so it was like a serious role. It wasn't like where he was just all jokey and sarcastic and shit.
A lot of car chases, a lot of car wrecks, stunts, ramps, Dukes of Hazzard type shit. You can see where they got a lot of that stuff. To me, this is almost like a very accurate portrayal of the South of the 70s. Slightly stylized and glorified by Southerners for Southerners. It's very fair about the way it was. But it also very entertaining. And kind of like a Deep South version of Mad Max in a certain way. Along that, Mad Max is post-apocalyptic. Shit, the South has been post-apocalyptic since the Civil War. All right. The South was destroyed during the Civil War, basically, if you read the history. They burned most of the cities down. Fucking, they fucked everything up. Reconstruction fucking was terrible. And then it immediately plunged into a damn race war. You know, so it was post-apocalyptic.
I kind of picture, yeah. I mean, movies like this, and if you read the Wikipedia page on it, like Burt Reynolds was even saying that it's like, you know, a lot of these types of movies, because he did several of these, and the producers that did this movie, like, made a whole bunch of them. Was that these were specifically made, you know, in the South, and they were made for Southern audiences, and they said basically we'd show them in the theater, and they didn't cost that much to make, so you didn't even have to necessarily, like, show them anywhere else in the country. They did, but you didn't have to. You'd still make your money back just because...
They said they can make all their money back just on, what was it? Not Nashville, was it? Was it
Memphis,
Nashville?
Memphis.
Memphis. Ticket sales in Memphis was enough to make all their money back. Anything out of that, outside that, was all gravy. So these were like very profitable movies.
Well, because as I said, it's just like any subgenre. It's like Southerners probably wanted to see their own lives up on screen, and you know, Southern working class. Because you didn't really see that in a lot of movies. You still don't.
You're right.
And honestly, even movies that are... I guess it's a little bit better nowadays. It's a little more realistic. But for a while, I kind of feel like there was a time... maybe I'm thinking about the 80s, where they would show some quote-unquote working-class characters, and I'd be like, they look pretty upper-middle-class to me. I was like, that's not real working-class.
Right.
You'd have to see some, like, pretty grungy, like, indie movies to see actual working-class people in movies. They would, you know, it's I used to say, like, in 80s movies, they would say somebody that had a job that doesn't pay all that much, and they lived alone, and they lived in this really big, like, really nice apartment. I'm like, yeah, in no universe would that happen. But, you know, so I think that's maybe part of the appeal was that this felt to me, even though it's Arkansas and I grew up in Florida, but it looked similar. I mean, the working class areas, the rural areas look very similar. You still have that kind of swampy type of shit going on, and the way people lived was very similar. And I, like I said, I bet people liked, you know, people that lived like that were kind of like jazzed to see people like them on the screen.
Yeah, a good example is that this would be the white Southern version of a Rudy Ray Moore flick, like Dolomite. Even though those were comedies, this is more like an action movie.
Yeah.
Still the same thing.
Action movie drama,
action,
I guess.
Right. Still the same thing. This was, you had Rudy Ray Moore was black product. This is more like Southern product. That's a good description of it. But anybody would enjoy watching these. The North, South, black, white, whatever. They're great movies, fun. The budget was not big, but the quality of the production was good, and the acting was real good. The writing, what makes it good was the writing. The writing was pretty good. Some of the car chases would be kind of passe by today's standards. They weren't as fantastic as Mad Max 1, all right? Or, you know, like Bullet. They're not that good. But not bad for the budget.
Can I just say, I love the scene where there's... Because there's several car chases in this. Because it's similar to, you know, where he has, like, they're running moonshine and he has, like, somebody that is... you know, kind of driving in front of him and, like, you know, distracting the cops or whatever. And so he's got, I don't remember what kind of car it was, but Burt Reynolds drives this car, like, kind of off this ramp and onto, like, a flat ferry. Yeah. Remember that scene? And, like, the car, it doesn't go all the way on.
It just
kind of bonded in, like, the back.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like... Yeah. And then, like, later they show up, like, going to the mechanic and be like, what the fuck did you do to the undercarriage? And he's just kind of like, what?
Yeah, you know, and he crawled, you could tell it was a real stunt.
It was a real stunt.
It didn't quite stick the landing. He crawls out of the damn driver's side window and gets on the hood before the car falls off the barge. It never does, but
it looks like it's going
at any minute. It's good. And another thing that I thought was really cool is that Gator... He gets into a jam eventually. I mean, he's supposed to be getting dirt on these bad cops, you know, and he's supposed to, he's going to have, testify against him, you know, in a federal court. And he gets into this fucking position like, you know, he may have to kill some of these cops should he do it. And yeah, it gets they got that bad where he didn't have a choice.
Pretty much. Well, and he was kind of getting it from both ends because right. then, like, the Moonshiners, they got pissed because they found out that he was...
Gonna rat. Yeah.
You know, even though he didn't necessarily want to rat on them, he was just trying to get that one cop, like, that dirty cop, because that cop killed his brother. Yeah. But the Moonshiners didn't see it like that. They just said, well, you're working undercover for the feds, and you're going to expose yeah. us, and we don't want them. So he was kind of getting shit on from both sides. So, yeah, he got, like, more and more into a jam, like, and he had friends that, like, turned against him when, you know, when they found out. But, so there was that whole thing. Okay, the only criticism I have of this is that I thought the end... Which I don't want to spoil the end, but the end I thought was a little abrupt, considering.
Yeah.
I thought that they should have, like, made it, like, a bigger
yeah.
deal.
Should have had more of, like, a grand finale. But you yeah. could tell that it was a limited budget. Now, I've heard that Gator, the second movie, is better. It has a bigger budget. I don't know yet. I haven't
yeah,
seen
it. I've seen it, but it was so long ago that, yeah. I mean, I must have probably been like 12 when I saw it.
We'll watch that one too. I'm just going to reserve comment on it because we haven't seen it. But supposedly the second one's even better. But we'll see.
I will say, I was kind of curious. Like, the guy that directed this, Joseph Sargent, I wanted to see what else he had done because I think he had worked with Burt Reynolds before. Burt Reynolds was actually in another movie called Sam Whiskey, like back in 1969, which I think is where they got the idea to cast him in this. But I found out that the same director that did this is how small world it is, also directed that horror anthology Nightmares from 1983, the one with Emilio Estevez and the Bishop of Battle and all that kind of stuff, which actually I've been wanting to rewatch. He also directed Colossus, The Forbidden Project, The Taking of Pelham 123, and Jaws the Revenge, the one with Michael Caine, the terrible one. But, well, it's so bad it's good. I saw that in the theater. But yeah, it was like the same director. But yeah, I mean, shit. If you like Southern stuff, like I said, we'll probably be watching Gator as well. We were going to do, like I said, we were trying to watch Cannonball Run last night because we were going to do that for tomorrow. But we couldn't find it on streaming. They have Cannonball Run 2 everywhere, but not the first one. Somebody put it up on YouTube, like, in... So, you know, we didn't really want to sit through it. So, I don't know. So, actually, for tomorrow, do you want to do that German Christopher Lee movie we watched? We can talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah, all right. That was a weird flick.
What was it called? The torture chamber of Dr. Sadism?
Dr. Sadism. Yeah.
I think that was just the US or the UK title. Yeah. Like, I think the German title was something else.
Yeah. Yeah, Graham says that Burt Reynolds was a serious action star before he became a parody in the 1980s. Yeah. Smokey and the Bandit, I think, and Cannonball Run, I think, kind of...
Those are fun movies, but they kind of more turned him into, like, a clown.
Yeah, and I think that was probably the end of him as a serious action star. But, you know what, he was getting on in age at the time when all that was happening. So maybe that was his best way out, to get out of the action leading man role. When you see him here in White Lightning, he's still pretty much in his prime. You see why he was a...
Yeah, he's pretty young in this.
Yeah, he's pretty young. He's kind of in his best form in this movie that I've seen him in. So he makes a lot more sense. He kind of plays the same character through every time you see him in the movie. He's almost kind of like playing himself.
Yeah, I mean, but that can work, depending.
Right. Now, some people say, well, he's not a real Southerner. He's from Michigan. He's Southern. He was born in Michigan because his dad was in the army at the time and stationed up there. But his family was from Georgia. After the army, he and his dad moved the family, I think it was to Florida, and he's from Central Florida. So this is also a Florida movie. His dad was the chief of police of one of these counties around here, or one of these cities. I forgot which one it was. Fort Wayne, I think. No.
That's Indiana.
It's one of the forts. it's here in Florida. Isn't that where you went to on your little vacation?
No, that was St. Augustine.
Maybe that's where it was. It sounded familiar. I thought it was Fort, but something or other, though. But Yeah, Reynolds' dad.
What,
was
Fort
a chief.
Myers? Was it
might have been Fort Myers?
Fort Myers.
I think it's what it was. It was his dad was chief of police of one of those cities. I think it was Fort Myers, maybe. It's probably on Wikipedia. You guys can see it.
Grand Theft also says one of Ned Beatty's last movies was Charlie Wilson's War. That was actually a really great movie. Yeah. I saw it in the theater. He played a congressman who funded the Taliban fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan. Highly recommend it. Yeah, that was a great movie. Like I said, I saw it in the theater when it came out.
Yeah. And he said he redeemed himself in Boogie Nights. Yeah, he redeemed himself in Boogie Nights, but he was playing a much older role, and that's not what he would normally played.
God damn it, I love Boogie Nights.
Yeah, that was
so
a
much.
Great movie.
I love Boogie Nights.
Reynolds was cool. I mean, yeah. I don't agree with all of his facelifts. Some of them facelifts didn't work out
hey,
too
it's
well.
It's his face.
It's his face.
You know? I don't. If people want to do whatever they want with it, that's like that's fine. I'm not buying it.
He had many of them, and some of them looked better than others. He eventually did kind of settle down to where, yeah, that looks pretty good. But I haven't seen him recently. But that first facelift he got looked ridiculous.
Yeah, I'd have got my money back on that one. Grampter says, Bert is the pride of Lansing, Michigan.
Well, he was born there, but he wasn't from Michigan.
Well, I know, but you know how everybody from
they're
the city...
They're trying to claim that motherfucker.
Sure, because anybody
he
that's
is
famous...
from Georgia.
Anybody that's famous, they're going to be like, hey, that person was born here, went to high school here, whatever.
He basically grew up in Florida.
Do you know that the guy that played Lurch... On the original Addams Family, used to be a lifeguard on Daytona Beach, I think.
Yeah.
Like, way back in the old days. Mm. I think he might have even gone to high school in Daytona. He might have gone to mainland, if I'm remembering it correctly. I think somebody told me that, but I just can't remember. Danny Rowling says his face had more lifts than Tom Cruise's shoes.
Yeah.
Cheryl asks, have you reviewed Boogie Nights? Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
It was a while back. It was probably like a year or more ago. But, yeah. So, I guess that'll do it for... Yeah, so White Lightning, it's on Amazon Prime. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's also on Tubi for free if you don't have Amazon Prime. I'm not sure about Gator. We'll have to look that up because that's, like, the sequel to this, I guess, or whatever, with the same character. So we'll see about that. But, like I said, tomorrow we will probably talk... We're going out tonight, so...
tonight, that's right, I forgot.
Tonight's the last Memento Mori because Barbarella's moving.
Yeah.
So we don't know when they're going to redo Memento Mori. Like, we don't know where they're going to move it to. So we'll see. But this will be the last one, so we got to go to it. And so tomorrow we'll probably talk about... what did I say it was called? The... Fuck, man. The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism. That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
It was like a German movie, and Christopher Lee was in it for, like, 10 minutes or something. But it was all right. It was nice to look at, I thought. It was kind of fun. So, yeah, and the lady that was in it looked almost exactly like Barbara Steele, but it was not Barbara Steele. You should do a Ted Cassidy tribute vid. Yeah, we probably should. I mean, I was a big fan of his. But, yeah. So, anyway, thanks for dropping by on our Burt Reynolds Day. And we will be back tomorrow afternoon talking about a different movie. So, thanks, everybody. Bye.